Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, let's get going here for a Friday afternoon as we take into the weekend. It is hot and sticky. We had another downpour downtown out where I live. It was maybe sprinkling just a bit, but I spent some quality time on the pickleball courts in Forest Park with Jeff and Janet Rainford this morning, and it was really, really hot and sticky. But hopefully we can enjoy a nice summer weekend with baseball back, which is nice. On the roundtable this afternoon, Tim Fitch, former St. Louis County Councilman and former St. Louis County Police Chief. Hello, Chief.
Hello, how are you? Good afternoon.
Great to have you in here. Jeff Smith is here, former state senator. He is the executive director of the Missouri Workforce Housing Association. That's a mouthful.
That was a Freudian slip there, wasn't it?
The workhouse.
A little prison joke. Sorry. I get it.
We're going to have another reference to that a little bit later. We just wait for that with some talk about Mom Donnie. So look, I got to start with some breaking news here today, and this is really sad. I know that you guys are going to be upset about this. I think the audience is going to be upset about it too, because Olive Garden is basically banning black people and married women from using their pasta passes. Have you heard this?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, this is, you don't have to provide an ID. You guys, Jeff, don't think you should have to provide an ID to vote. But Olive Garden has the never-ending pasta pass. And what they said today is it's only for use by the pass holder, whose name is printed on the pass. Passes are personalized and non-transferable. Pass holders must present a valid photo ID along with the pass. So they basically don't want black people and married women from eating it, you know, Olive Garden. We can admit that, right? You can admit that based on what your party stands for right now with IDs. I don't think there's any other conclusion you can draw from that. Tim, I think you'd agree with me, right?
Well, do you get salad with that or just pasta?
I think you do get salad, too. Well, I think you get breadsticks.
I love their salad.
Right. But you got to have the ID. Yeah, if you don't right. have the ID, you're out.
Not a problem for me.
Do you even want to entertain my satire, Smith? Are you done with me already? Five minutes into the show.
I'm happy to entertain your satire. Talked about this before. I was a, you know, black history major in college, and one of the things that I studied was, you know, Jim Crow and the period in which people in the Deep South were not able to vote, were not able oftentimes to obtain identification from the state. So when I was, as a lot of people know, because of the Mississippi, a lot of people, the Great Migration, a lot of people came up from Mississippi up Highway, you know, 61. From like Clarksville up to places like St. Louis. So we have a pretty significant black population here that has its roots in the Deep South, in Mississippi in particular. So when I was knocking on doors, when I ran for the state Senate, I had a district that included North St. Louis. About 2/3 of my district was black. And I encountered a lot of people, older people in their 70s and 80s, that did not have a birth certificate and had trouble producing the documentation that would have been needed to, you know, definitively prove their identification because of the circumstances of their birth in Mississippi many, many years ago. Now, those problems are, of course, starting to fade out generationally as that generation dies off. But they were a real thing when I campaigned for office 20 years ago. So I don't want to be like glibly dismissive of them.
But there was a period that I was on Camo X, and this is like 13, 14 years ago, where I would beg for someone to give me one person who couldn't vote. And there was never one person. So, look, you have to provide ID. You should have ID if you're elderly or not. You need to have ID. Now, let's kind of segue into what happened last night, because the president gave a speech. I was at the soccer game. And what I would say is there was nobody, except for a very small sliver of society this morning, that gave up and like, oh, man, we're on the election 2020 bandwagon. We got to figure that out. Nobody's saying that. Now, if you're someone out there who feels that way, you are in about the percentage of minority that people who think that there's, you know, no fairness issue with women playing men's sports. I get that there are people, because I hear from them, that are all about stolen elections. This is not the way for us to move forward. It was a dull speech. It was teleprompter Trump. There wasn't really anything that was mind-blowing. The one thing I will say is it's ridiculous that ABC, NBC, and CNN can even talk about it. They have every right to not air the speech, but if you don't air the speech, you shouldn't be able to talk about it. I tuned in after the soccer game to CNN, and they're breaking it down. I'm like, you guys didn't even air the speech. How can you do that ethically? So I thought it was a waste of time. I'm not a stolen election person. I do think that there are flaws that need to be exposed. But I'll start with you, Tim. What the hell was that even about last night?
I have to admit, I didn't watch one second of it.
Because most people didn't.
Yeah, I was at the Pachyderm meeting last night. It happened to be last night. So these are all Republicans that get together once a month.
And nobody was talking about
it. Not a person.
Of course they
nobody
weren't.
Was talking about, hey, are you going to watch? Are you going to, you know, zero.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, at some point we have got to move on. And I get it. If there's crimes that were committed and they need to be investigated, I understand all that. By the way, we do have, even in St. Louis County, some non-citizens that have voted. We know that for a fact. Not a ton, but there are some. The guest speaker last night at the Pachyderm meeting was Rick Stream.
He's the director
of elections for St. Louis County.
Great guy.
And we talked about what that looks like in St. Louis County. There's been some. And he's got it narrowed down that he thinks the majority of the non-citizens that are being registered to vote are happening at DMV sites. Probably in more liberal parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some, but they really do a good job in St. Louis County of rooting those people out and removing them from the rolls.
I hate that Smith's going to probably agree with me on this, too, and dump on the speech, even though you didn't watch it either, like everyone else. But, I mean, I just didn't get it. I think that doing a speech and explaining to the country what's going on with Iran, I don't think that was even mentioned last night, right? So it's confusing what they're doing and who's telling him to do this.
Yeah, so I would say, number one, I appreciate that you have never been an election denier. And in the immediate aftermath of the 2020 elections, you were one of the first kind of like, you know, mainstream conservative pundits that was like, look, we got to turn the page. This is, you know, there's no proof. Bill Barr, who is as staunch a conservative Republican
no
as
doubt.
They get, and someone who nobody questioned his ability to kind of probe these things, looked at the president and said in mid-December of 2020, this was the most secure election probably in our lifetime, maybe in American history. So I think I appreciate that. Now let me back up and say this ridiculousness continues to plague the Republican Party. And you saw it this week when Jay Clayton went in front of the United States Senate to try to be confirmed as the head of national intelligence in this country, and he could not answer John Ossoff's very simple question, who won the 2020 election? John Ossoff was right. It's embarrassing to have someone come up and ask to lead our nation's intelligence services and not be able to answer a question that my sixth grader can answer very easily.
Did anybody ask him if he could define a woman?
That would have been a good question.
Yeah.
That would have been a good follow-up.
I see that kind of as the same thing, a different angle.
I just think that, look, to the people who are fired up about this and you want criminal charges and all that, well, first of all, that would have to come from the Justice Department,
right?
And you'd have to make a case for that. But I just don't see what the purpose is of relitigating that moving forward. And by the way, you know, Trump was in office up until 2020. The other thing about this
is... He was in charge.
Right, exactly. So, but are we just picking... See, this is where I'm confused. Was there just cheating for, you know, the Democrats? Because plenty of Republicans win, too, and there's states that went to Trump. So I don't even get a lot of the allegations. Now, I know that in his mind, he feels like there were enough votes.
Yeah, thank you. And if there was cheating in 2020, why didn't Biden cheat in 2024 when he was running the government? I mean, it makes no sense on any level, but I'm vicariously embarrassed for your party when your high-level nominees have to go and indulge this president's ridiculous delusions.
Right, but here's the great news. You got the Democrats, Socialists of America running your party. So you can criticize all that, but we feel pretty comfortable because you guys are off-the-wall crazy, and that's what's dominating the headlines for the Democrats. I mean, they own your party. Now, the guy that goes to Rikers to watch the World Cup with inmates? Are you kidding me? That's your party, dude. So you can criticize everything, and I'm open to that, but you got to own your own stuff too, I think.
I don't think the 2020 election issue is gaining any additional votes for the party, for the Republican Party. It's just not.
No, so and it's not going to.
Let's move on.
Right.
Talk about the future.
Unable to do that, though. right? Now, let's talk about Iran a little bit here, because, again, we're pounding the living daylights out of them, apparently. How much more pounding of the living daylights do we need to do? Because I think we have to have some closure on this eventually, and something that defines victory. That's what I would have liked to have heard from the president last night. What's going to define victory in Iran when Iran is not giving up? This ceasefire is a joke. The memo of understanding is a memo of misunderstanding. So, like, go in, finish the job, take out more of the ports, do whatever you have to, but this is way past the deadline.
That's right. In 3 weeks, I'm getting ready to go to Basra, Iraq, which is one small river away from Iran. So it's right across the river in Iraq. And I'll tell you, there's only two ways this is going to end. Either it's going to be a serious escalation or somebody backs down. There's no other way out of this. So what do you think Trump will do? Do you think he'll back down?
No.
Or do you think there's going to be serious escalation?
Serious escalation.
That's what you see starting right now. You see the beginning of it right now.
And I'm fine with that.
He's starting to hit some of the supply routes, you know, the bridges and railroads and those type of things that get supplies to the area over near the Persian Gulf. And I think that's going to continue. And in the meantime, Iran is trying to figure out what to do to us. So they're going to continue to target our military bases in those countries that surround the Persian Gulf. That's not going to stop. You know, Syria is getting ready to open up to the U.S., to businesses in the U.S. That's a big deal. So there's a pipeline that's decommissioned called the Kirkuk Pipeline that goes from Iraq over to through Syria and out at the Mediterranean. They're going to recommission that and start pushing oil out there. You already have Saudi Arabia's oil pipeline that goes over into the Red Sea that comes out a different strait into the Gulf of Aden. So you're going to see the development of alternative transportation sources for oil instead of using the Strait of Hormuz. LNG, liquefied natural gas, still has to go through the Persian Gulf. There's no pipeline for that. So my guess is the next thing that the Iranians will do is start trying to bomb some of those pipelines that are taking the alternative routes. So it's going to be interesting to see how this comes to a head.
But yeah, I didn't know we had Middle East expert on energy here with us.
Seriously.
on the panel today, Jeff. That's very impressive. Thank you for that. I'm serious. No, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm totally outclassed by Tim on that. I very briefly, though, I will say, you know, I didn't get a chance to respond to your dig at Mamdani for, you know, watching.
Oh, yes.
The World
please
Cup,
respond. Please do.
Aren't you being a little hypocritical here? Didn't you watch the Cardinals game with the criminal the other night?
I did. You know who I watched it with? Him.
I knew that's what you were going to say.
We got to take a break. We're coming back with more.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
It's a Friday Reardon Roundtable. We have former St. Louis County Police Chief and County Councilman Tim Fitch on the panel this afternoon. Also, Jeff Smith, former state senator. Let's kind of go through because, look, we have an election. I cannot believe that this primary is 2 weeks away. It's 2 weeks from Tuesday. A lot of amendments. There are county executive races in both St. Charles and St. Louis County. Bill Eigel will be here in the 5 o'clock hour. I've been getting the candidates for St. Charles County Executive on the air. Jason Law came in a couple of days ago. I think we have Steve Ellman booked for Tuesday. But let's start, Jeff. I'll start with you on that race in St. Charles and St. Louis County. Look, Brian Williams, very impressive guy. I sat down to lunch with him several months ago. I thought he was definitely going to seal this deal. But Jake Zimmerman, who's the county assessor, super nice guy, a ginger, kind of smiles a lot, you know, goofy. He's playing into that a little bit. He's got money. He's got ads out there. Did Brian Williams sit on his butt too much and not do enough to win this election? And get real close to that mic. I want to make sure you're on that mic.
Yeah. So St. Louis politics, for those of us who have kind of followed it for a long time or been involved in it for a long time, there are these things called stalking horse candidates where sometimes candidates will file for office and they don't necessarily think that they got a great shot of winning or even much of a shot of winning at all. But they kind of want to screw somebody else.
Spoiler,
in
play
the
spoiler, right?
Yeah. And you saw a surprise. It's kind of a prototypical St. Louis politics deal with Senator Angela Walton Mosley, who kind of got in the race at the very last minute, the last day. She's been a rival of Brian Williams in the state Senate. They have butted heads for years. And being that she construed the two of them to kind of be fishing in the same waters for votes, she thought, you know, if I win, maybe I'll win. But if I don't win, I'll certainly be able to keep him from winning.
Right.
And That's complicated the math for him. Jake Zimmerman wasn't counting on that, but he's certainly benefiting, I think, from that. He's running a strong campaign. He's raising a lot of money. He's a brilliant guy. I served with him in the legislature 20 years ago and kind of watched him up close. And, you know, he's a Harvard law guy.
Went to Harvard, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, he is, but he's not arrogant about it. He's,
no.
He's a unique
He could not be a nicer guy. I don't know Jake very well, but yeah, he's super nice guy. And look, let me just say this. No matter who wins, it's going to be a step up from what we have right now. But go ahead. I don't know if there's anything more to say about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But look, I mean, I think, you know, I've watched, you know, Jake has an incredible mastery of public policy. So, you know, he's I think, you know, you'd have to say he's got the momentum now, and he's been rising, he's on TV, and, you know, it's going to be a fascinating race. We'll see if one of them can really kind of like, you know, have a moment here, you know, because I still think anybody, you know, either I don't think, you know, Senator Walton Mosley is going to win. I do think, you know, either of the other two could.
You know, and this is going to be about turnout. You are, Chief is working for Dennis Hancock, who is running as a Republican, and I don't think he's even opposed, is he?
No, there's no primary.
So, you know, he'll be the general election candidate. I've been around this too long to think that a Republican has a chance. Nothing against Dennis, because I know him. I've known him since he was mayor of Fenton. But, you know, this is interesting. I can make a case that either one of those guys certainly are better than Sam Page. And I don't have anything against Jake necessarily, but I don't know if I know where both of them stand on a lot of issues, because I don't even think people are dialed in to that at this point. But where are you on the Democrat side of that race?
Well, I will tell you that I'm surprised that Angela didn't change her last name to Williams to really confuse things in the primary, because that's what she's there for, to spoil it for Brian Williams, for Senator Williams. No doubt about that. Now, I will tell you, from a purely governance standpoint, Dennis Hancock's the best, and not just because I'm his treasurer. He is the best person for the job. I would say the number two after that, for governance reasons, would probably be Jake Zimmerman. And he did call me when he decided to jump into the race and say, hey, I'm thinking about challenging Sam Page in a primary. And I said, I wish you would. and then Page bailed. So, and then Dennis announced he was running. So that was kind of the sequence of events for me. But I do like Brian Williams. I've spent a lot of times with in full disclosure, my brother is a friend of his. So, and they always talk about each other and what great people they are. So, I think this is going to be a draw. It's almost a toss up between Brian and Jake. I really do believe that in the Democrat side. So Angela doesn't have a chance.
I've been fooled by politicians before. I think we all have. I'm going to use Eric Reitens as the primary example of that, because I knew Eric very well. We were friends. I did the Mission Continue stuff, and you know, that didn't end very well, unfortunately for a lot of people. But in this particular case, you know, I like Brian, and I can't say this as much about Jake just because I haven't sat down with him recently, but I feel like Senator Williams is someone, and again, he could be fooling me, that wants to be micro-focused on St. Louis County in a way that Kara is not doing, you know, news releases on Palestine and all that other stuff, right? Fix the problems in St. Louis County. I sense that is something that both those guys might be interested in. I'm hoping that they genuinely are. But again, I've been fooled before.
I think it's a case for both of them. I think... My good friend, who, you know, I've referenced here before on the show, got elected mayor of San Francisco a year and a half ago. And I think he's set a model for mayors of both parties all over the country over the last year and a half, and that he will not get drawn into national politics. He's in San Francisco, a hotbed of liberalism. They try to get him to talk about Trump and say things about
Trump. I think
Trump.
It's smart. He's smart.
And he won't
Daniel
do it.
Lurie is his Daniel name, right?
Lurie, yeah. Yeah. And he won't do it. He's like, that's not what people elected me for. They didn't elect me to the U.S. Senate. They didn't elect me to Congress. They elected me to fix this city,
good
to
for
clean
him.
It up and make it work again. And I think that mentality is certainly benefiting Kara Spencer here. And I think it will benefit, you know, Jake or Brian if they get elected.
So any gut check for you guys on the St. Charles race? Because that's going to be a toss-up too, I think. Now, Jason Law, I said, was in here a couple of days ago. Solid guy, police officer, as you know, Chief. Used to be the mayor of Lake St. Louis. I just don't think he doesn't have any
doesn't
name
have
recognition. Right. Bill and Steve, look, let's face it. Steve Ellman wasn't going to run for this race, right? He knew that Bill Igel was going to get in. They do not like each other. Bill has a big presence out there in St. Charles County. So I don't know what happens here. I mean, I ask one person, they think Ellman's going to win. I ask the next person, they think that Igel's going to win. So is this another coin toss here, Jeff?
Yeah, I think it is another coin toss. You know, but I will say that, you know, former Senator Igel, you know, he spent most of the last several years traveling around the state as opposed to focusing on St. Charles. And so we'll see if that has implications for his race, because sometimes voters, you know, they're human like anybody else. And they might think like, wait, you weren't focused on us. You were in 113 other counties, you know, as much as you were here. And, you know, he didn't dominate St. Charles County in the gubernatorial primary. And so I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see if voters think, hey, he's looking at us as a consolation prize. I'm not saying they do or they don't, but I'm saying I've heard that sentiment expressed by a few people.
Thoughts, St. Charles County.
Clearly, Bill Igel wants to be something bigger and better than the St. Charles County executive. No doubt about it. Now, if voters have a problem with that, they'll probably vote most likely for Steve Ellman. Steve Ellman doesn't want to do anything else other than be the St. Charles County executive and then retire at some point. Jason Law is an up-and-comer. I'm a financial donor to Jason Law. I've knew him for 25 years. I worked for him. He's a St. Louis County Police Lieutenant Colonel. So I know his skill set, and I think he'll do a great job if he's elected. And maybe not this time, but maybe next time.
Let's get to the amendments, because I'm certainly sensing, we've been talking about this for a while, Jeff Smith, Tim Fitch on the panel. I don't only sense that Amendment 5 is going to go down. I was saying 2-1. I think it might be 3-1 at this point, because the Democrat opposition to this is like 80%. One thing that's interesting, maybe you can explain this to me, because you know who's out there plugging this thing more than anyone else on Facebook? Jamila Nasheed. Now, she's getting paid by someone, right? Okay, but she's doing Facebook posts every day. And by the way, thank you, former Senator Nasheed. I agree with you. I'm going to vote for Amendment 4 and Amendment 5, but maybe I'll start with you, Chief. Is there going to be any momentum? People are, they're not on board with it.
Well, again, last night, I'm at the Republican, the Pachyderm. That's a conservative group. And even they're split on 5.
I know, because a lot of Republicans are against it.
They are split on 5 as well. So that is an omen, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think 5 is going to pass. 4, on the other hand, it depends. I don't know. I don't think it'll pass either, just honestly. That's my anecdotal feeling.
Because I think people are going to vote no on an instinct, not really understanding what that's all about. That would be my concern. Thoughts on the amendments, Jeff?
Yeah, I'd also say that, like you said, I see polling from state Senate races around the state a lot. And so you can see what Democratic primary voters are feeling about it, and you can see what Republican primary voters are feeling about it, because oftentimes when candidates are trying to figure out how to respond to various issues, they'll poll not just their own race, but they'll poll different issues, right?
Right.
And so when you look at the Democratic state Senate primaries, I'm seeing like 10 to 90, right? Like against it.
Yeah.
90 to 10 against it. And in the Republican seats, I'm seeing it like 50-50. So there is no math that works in this state.
No.
If you lose 90-10 in the cities and you split even in the, you know, conservative
areas. I think that needs to be rewritten next time. Instead of splitting out the vote like that by congressional district, they need to do a, like, 60%.
You're talking about the amendment 4.
You're talking about 4.
Yeah, I was talking about 5.
Okay, I'm talking about 4.
Yeah, let's go to 4 now, okay. which changes the initiative petition process. And instead of requiring a majority of voters to support something to change the Constitution, it would require a majority in all 8 congressional districts. Sorry, Tim.
No, that's right. I thought we were moving on.
On the Senate races, you know, we had Steve Butz was on last week, and when I get a little closer to the election, we give that a break, so he won't be on until after hopefully he wins. But that's a race that is pretty hot here in St. Louis County and St. Louis City. Steve, a moderate Democrat, you know, common sense. He is Catholic, and Gina Mitten, his opponent, is making her race all about abortion, which is going to play in Maplewood and Richmond Heights and Clayton and part of that district. This is going to be a turnout thing. Steve's got good media presence. He's got name recognition, I think. He's got billboards and signs out there. But I got people telling me she's going to win, Jeff. I mean, what do you feel about that one?
I think that's another toss-up race. I think that's a very salient issue among Democratic primary voters. And
the abortion issue.
Yeah. And, you know, Steve's record, you know, interest of full disclosure, I support Steve as well. His record is mixed and has evolved on that issue, where he took a vote that, you know, was more on the pro-life side back in 2019, but then since then has taken several pro-choice votes and actually did campaign for Amendment 3 in 2024. So that gives comfort to a lot of people that are pro-choice, that he's kind of, you know, like evolved, you know, some on that issue. I will say this. If voters go to the polls thinking about reproductive freedom, it's going to be really tough for him to win. If voters go to the polls thinking about, I want the most effective state senator that can do the most for this region and has shown the ability to really build relationships across the aisle and get things done and be effective, Steve's got a great chance to win.
I'll tell you about relationships across the aisle for Steve. I gave him money. So and that doesn't mean because I think he's a conservative. It's because I think that compared to him and Gina's platforms, I think he's going to be the better state senator of the two. And I also applaud him for sticking to his principles. you know, you got to give him some credit for that as well. You know, on the abortion issue, is that you said he's kind of moderated a little bit on that. I would tell you not much, in my opinion. He's still very pro-life. And I think that's going to resonate with even there's a fair number of Democrat voters out there that are pro-life as well.
So, well, there used to be a path for that. I mean, I go back way back even to the 1980s when Harold Volkmer represented the 9th District in Missouri, which is different now, but he was pro-life and pro-gun.
I think it comes down to this. Voters, I would like to see go to the polls and think, hey, we're living in reality, which is a supermajority Republican legislature. I want the person that is well-regarded by everybody, can get along with everybody, and when he stands up to talk, people across the aisle and on his own side respect what he has to say because he's not a blowhard. He's not a bomb thrower. He knows how to get stuff done.
And that's Steve.
It sounds like Brian Williams, too.
Hang on. We got two more segments of the Rear Roundtable on a Friday coming up.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me, you were talking about some of the election stuff. Let me continue on that just a little bit. Former St. Louis County Councilman and Police Chief Tim Fitch is here. Former State Senator Jeff Smith on the roundtable panel this afternoon. What kind of odds, Chief, do you give Cori Bush at maybe upsetting Wesley Bell in this Democrat primary in a couple of weeks?
Very little.
Really?
I think as it's gotten closer, she's crashing and burning. You know, everything came out about she's paying her husband again, paying a salary again for her husband and herself, by the way. I mean, if you're donating to her campaign, are you okay with that? That she's using that to pay her husband and herself.
Well, I've donated heavily to her campaign because I really want her back. I do.
I think that one's over.
What are you showing me, Jeff Smith? I don't even know.
I'm showing you the current Kalshi odds on the race.
Oh, what is it?
It's got her ahead, favored 50, you know.
Are you serious?
She's
I believe it
she's
because...
She's a 55% favorite over him right now. I don't agree with that. I think he's going to win. I think certainly... As you've referenced ad nauseum over the last few months, there is a trend around the country for these extreme progressive candidates to come out of Democratic primaries. But think about who those people are. In most cases, they're not particularly well known. They're kind of coming out of nowhere, kind of the fresh young thing. Sometimes they're even like baristas or, you know, people, you know, kind of like AOC style candidates. That's not really what she is anymore. You know, she's got more baggage than that. She's not the fresh face anymore, especially with all of the, you know, issues that her husband and involving her campaign finance situation. So I don't think she's going to benefit from that national trend quite the same way.
Man, this is St. Louis. This isn't New York.
I would at least give it a chance, though. But, you know, I watched some stuff that was on, I don't know if it was another radio show or a podcast. By the way, is that my phone or somebody else's phone?
It's mine.
Smith, is that you? So, I mean, and I don't want to get into this because I think it's a little unfair to Congressman Bell, but some of the stuff that they were alleging and getting into in the accusations, you know, involving sexuality and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, my God, I couldn't really believe that they were going there. So it's down and dirty and nasty.
Desperate.
Well, right. But, I mean, I certainly couldn't count her out just based on, you know, what we've seen around the country with some of these candidates. So I'll be very curious to see what happens in that race. Did you follow? And, you know, this is a story that I said the other day probably should have gone national for unfortunate reasons.
The comedian?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The comedian that came in for Cori Bush a couple.
Oh, I do know about that. Yes, I do know about that. But I was going to something else. Yes. Yeah, so you want to explain that? Because I just saw the video of that guy today.
Yeah, a comedian who she brought in for a fundraiser a couple of days ago just said some really offensive things about, you know, abortion, about LGBTQ people, you know, made a joke about at a big fundraising event saying, you know, we've got to keep abortion legal in Missouri because I have to go to Illinois.
Right,
I go so much over there that I get rewards points for coming back.
Geez.
I mean, you know, just some really distasteful things that I don't even enjoy repeating.
No, it was unfortunate. What I was referring to, and I don't know how much you guys, you know, paid attention to this, but Chief, I want your reaction. This murder in East St. Louis was just brutal. And, you know, you had a 15-year-old girl that's involved in this. And they have messages that have now been read between her and her 16-year-old boyfriend, who's now been charged as an adult. And she says, baby, I'm finna lose my whole family for you. Another message read, I love blood. They've both been charged this week. They carried out the murders of five people in different locations. They cut the thumb off of the grandmother to use that to open the phone. My understanding is they were trying to access money from the bank account. I mean, this stuff is shocking. If we were in a different news cycle, this would be a national story. It's horrific what happened here. How do you fix something like that?
Very difficult. This has been, this isn't a new phenomenon. It really isn't. This has been going on and leading up to this for many years. I'm talking about decades. I bet you if you check that 15-year-old and that 16-year-old, their mothers are probably 15 years older than them. So you're going to see that kind of lack of parental guidance because they're almost kids themselves still, those parents or mothers, usually just the mothers that are in the home. It is horrific. And if you were to say, wave a magic wand, how do you stop this? I'm drawing a blank. I just get overwhelmed by some of these issues that happen. And you almost throw your hands up and go, what else can we do? And I'm absolutely against the government being mom and dad. And that's where a lot of these conversations go. We need to do more. We need to give them more things to do, blah, 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 all that. You know, we all grew up. We didn't have mobile phones. We didn't have internet. None of this kind of stuff happened when I was young, when I was that age. We'd get together in big groups, but nobody attacked the police. Nobody shot fireworks at the police. It was just a different era then, because we knew if we did that, we'd have consequences to pay at home. And I don't think these kids.
I mean, the callousness of this crime is really.
Well, they've been numb to this. They've seen violence their whole life.
Right.
Yeah.
They've seen violence.
I would just say, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. But I did have a dad in my house, and I did have a stable house, and I did have a clean house, and I knew where I was getting my dinner every single night. And, you know, there was just a level of stability that that a lot of kids out there don't have these days.
Yeah, I had eight brothers and sisters growing up, and my mother stayed at home with us. And if we got in trouble during the day, we'd get it from her. And then when dad got home, we got it from him. So we learned pretty quick. That doesn't mean we didn't make mistakes.
Well, we're seeing this, you know, this is an hopefully isolated, really, really horrific, you know, mass murder, if you will. But what we're seeing that does occur around here are these teen takeovers. I talked about this a little bit with Heather McDonald, who's at the Manhattan Institute, mm-hmm. because she's chronicled a lot of these episodes from around the country. And there's, you know, look, you know this because it was funny. I was told some information last night just about the cops and how they monitor the social media, because this all spreads on social media.
Right.
And they got to be prepared mm-hmm. for when something's happening. So that stuff is getting more interesting as well, with the police trying to figure out and get ahead of these.
And you've seen things. Some of the warnings from police, like it'll come out. We know there's a talk about a takeover at Sky Zone in Baldwin.
We're aware of this, right?
We're aware of this. We're going to be there. We're going to be waiting. And then at some point, my guess is people will start putting out false information just to get the cops to go to different areas on social media. But the cops are actually getting ahead of this now, where it was just responding to it. And if you're one police officer and you show up at a teen takeover at a major intersection, and there's one of you and 300 of them, what really are you going to do? They know that.
They know it.
So you have to overwhelm them with police presence. It's the only way to fight it.
Well, we haven't anything that's been very serious in the last few weeks, but that's still an issue, and it's summer. And, you know, the most troubling thing about the one that happened at Sky Zone from Shrewsbury is the 12-year-old girl that's in Florissant sees the fighting and the melee, and she decides to grab a knife and take an Uber to that particular location. That's where I lose a lot of relatability.
It goes right back to the parental thing that I was just talking about.
I know
about.
It does. All right, one more break. We're coming back.
It's about the challenge we face as a nation. About the decisions I made, why I made them. Leading the country through COVID, rebuilding our economy. And
okay, I'd love to be able to translate all that for you, but I don't have the ability to do that on the fly. It's the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Chief Tim Fitch is here, Jeff Smith. Have you pre-ordered the book? November 17th is when it comes out. Tim, can you not wait? I'm going to get the audiobook because I can't wait for that.
Is it going to be his voice or his
I mean, if
twin?
He tries to do it, I really think it would be uncomfortable. Look, if you're going to do a book, you're a president, that's fine. But Jeff, that was a bad trailer. I mean, it didn't really give you any different, you know, view of Joe Biden outside of where we were 2 years ago.
I almost thought it was a parody.
Well, was it live?
Yeah, I mean,
because he should have re-recorded it. If that was live, he should have said, "Oh, take two."
Well, somebody should have. But yeah. I think that he is so on an island with Hunter and Jill. I mean, who else could be advising them and say that's a good idea?
Although Hunter is really having a reemergence here online.
I've seen it. I don't like whatever. I just don't get it. It's really, really bizarre. And, you know, I don't know what the actual definition for book sales would be these days. We looked up Joe Biden's sales, and it says only like 29,000 physical copies, which doesn't seem like a lot at all. And I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, right. How many did you sell of your book?
Like 40,000.
And your book was good, by the way.
Did you do an audiobook?
I did.
Was it your voice?
It was my voice.
Okay. I just wonder, do the authors, is it always their voice?
Not always, I don't
sometimes
think.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
Sometimes they get celebrities and stuff like that.
Mine was a little unique because, I've got the voices of other people in prison.
For those that don't know, Mr. Smith goes to prison.
Yeah.
It's a great book. If people don't know Jeff's story, You know, someone was asking me this the other night, how long we knew each other. I'm like, oh, Jeff was on the round table before all that happened.
20 years ago.
Right. You were on right at the beginning. And then, you know, just to recapture the despicable details, his best friend wore a wire. Look, what you did, you were sent to prison, which was, you know, for really not a big violation. And there are people that are doing a lot worse things these days. And I don't know how you deal with that mentally because, look, you served your time, you paid your penance, you wrote your book, you're doing fine in your life right now. But when you see some of these things, in my opinion, where people are making many more flagrant, offenses and crimes, and they're not even going to prison at all.
I think it's just wonderful that Trump is making billions off crypto while he changes all the regulations and his million followers lose billions.
Was that my question?
It makes me feel
I don't
great.
Remember that.
I love that. Obviously, seeing a lot of the stuff that goes on around the country today, especially from some of our political figures, the insider trading stuff, it does make me sick. But I think it makes all people sick. And I think everybody's ready for a change of that. It probably makes me a little bit more irritated than others, given what I went through. But I screwed up and I paid the price, and I just feel blessed to be where I am today.
Well, your story really is interesting. Mm-hmm. The book is really good. I don't read a lot of books, but I read that one, and it's fascinating. So
thank
you. Jeff's book. So just a couple things to round out the hour here. And I asked you guys this during the break, and you didn't watch it, but I had an option to go to see The Odyssey on Monday night, and I really kind of thought about it hard because I want to see it on the IMAX and 70mm, but I knew the Home Run Derby was going on. I knew Jordan Walker was in the Home Run Derby, and I'm so glad I decided to stay home because it was just immensely entertaining. I mean, you guys, you didn't see it. I would encourage you, if you have time this weekend, if you're a sports fan, pull up the last round because he's going against Kyle Schwarber, who's one of the best home run hitters in the game. He's there in Philadelphia, his home stadium, and Jordan looks like he's out of it. And we're like, okay, it's great. He did great. But then he hit 6 home runs in a row and he wins the damn thing. If you would have seen, so my friend Scott Jennings, who by the way will be in town next weekend for some baseball games, he and his son were in the right field bleachers and he posted like his play-by-play of that. The look on the fans around him, because they were all Philadelphia fans, they were so stunned. It was not even something that's describable because they were like, what the hell just happened? But Jordan Walker is an amazing story for St. Louis. Even though we have the exact same record as we did last year at this time, we enter the post All-Star break period, I think, feeling a lot more optimistic, right?
Absolutely. Let's keep in mind, too, he's the first Cardinals player in franchise history to win that.
McGuire never won it?
No.
Albert didn't win it.
He is the first.
Matt Holliday didn't win it either. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what happens Thursday when they come back to Busch Stadium. What's he going to get? Hopefully the players recognize him with the standing O. We'll see.
Well, I think he's going to get a really, really warm welcome just because it's an incredible story. Now, let's wrap up the World Cup. I have admitted that I'm not the biggest soccer person on the planet. I have thoroughly enjoyed the World Cup. It's been really, really entertaining. I mean, the U.S. gave it their best try. I am on the side of Spain because I lived with a family briefly in 1983. I'm still in contact with them in Valencia, Spain, so I've decided to go with my Spanish family. It's going to be a good game. Argentina keeps coming up with miracles, but this has been a fun World Cup. Now, England, I kind of forget, they have a third place game, right? So that's tomorrow. I think that's really kind of for money. I mean, if you finish third, I'm guessing the checks are bigger than if you finished fourth. But have you guys gotten into this or not?
I watched the last part of the U.S. game. That's it. for the whole World Cup. That's all I.
It's really been fun. And again, I'm not usually into soccer.
And then,
have you been too busy with politics?
Fan?
I'm not. You know, yeah, he's the best, right?
Yeah,
but you know,
he's
I
a big
care.
Deal. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
What I think is kind of fun is how they play at one pace for most of the game. And then it just gets furious.
Frenetic.
The pace.
Yeah.
Frenetic. And
right.
So, like, the last 5 minutes of the game when they're in injury time, and then, you know, one team is down by one goal, it's just a completely different style of game. They play so aggressive, and, like, that, to me, is the most fun part of the game.
Especially Argentina, because you could just feel it at the end. I mean, I'm sitting here in the studio the other day, and they've lost it, right? They're not going to win. And then 2 goals in 6 minutes was really incredible.
Now, little birdie told me you were at the game last night.
I was at the game last night. Rich Christmer, a friend, took me. You guys know him.
Yep.
He's a political
yep.
type. I had fun. You know, look, it was a beautiful night. It wasn't that hot, which was nice. And they won. They gave up. The second goal they gave up was ugly to KC, Sporting KC. But no, they won that game last night. And that's, I think, City's taking a big break. These MLS teams because of the World Cup. Look, the stadium is awesome. The you know, the energy is great. And it's so funny. Have you been to a game over there, Jeff?
Oh, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
It's the pretty people. It's so funny. You compare that crowd. They all got collared
shirts on.
Probably why
I haven't been there.
Yeah, you might not belong. All right, guys, thank you a lot. I appreciate it. Another roundtable in the book.
Get more at 971talk.com.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.